What's up, everyone? Alex here. This is For the Love of Video Games, episode 286. With me, as always, is the hologram to my gem, the G.I. Joe to my Duke, Daniel Santos. How's it going, man?
Well, I feel like I've forgotten how to count properly. Did you just say 286?
Yes, actually.
Did we skip an episode? What's going on here?
No. Actually, in fact, you guys are listening to this, right? And if you regularly check your podcast software every single Wednesday, then you'll notice that somehow maybe you might have skipped an episode. And the reason why there's a discrepancy is because in between last week's and this week's episode, we actually released episode 285. And 285 is a no-holds-barred spoiler cast for Shadowbringers, Final Fantasy XIV Shadowbringers. We talk about the, I want to say all of the story, but that's not true. That's absolutely not true. There is no way that we can summarize the entirety of a 40-hour RPG in 2 hours. We did it in an hour and 30. Yeah, so, but when you listen to it, and if you've actually listened and played and actually played through Shadowbringers, you listen to it and a lot of these memories of the game you just played will come back. And a lot of it has something to do with me and my guest, Rubicon Vale, a.k.a. Paul, a.k.a. one of the hosts of this awesome podcast called Gather Together Podcast. It's a Final Fantasy XIV-centric podcast. And you'll be able to hear our thoughts and, you know, and kind of talk about like our memories and our feelings of playing through the entirety of Shadowbringers. And as you know, as players of Final Fantasy XIV, you guys are you're no stranger to like plot twists and like just secret goings on in the backgrounds. And we're hoping that if you have played Shadowbringers, that when you listen to the episode, you kind of remember a lot of the things that we're talking about and you can kind of like think about like what your favorite things are for Shadowbringers, just like what we have and what we've shared. Because we actually, Daniel, we actually talked about it very methodically. Like what we did was we followed our entire experience throughout the entire expansion. Like we went zone by zone by zone and stuff and area by area. And yeah, like it was a crazy hour and 30, like so much high energy and so many spoilers, man.
Well, as to be expected from a spoiler cast.
Right. And, you know, we, you know, and I'm kind of thinking too that since we did that for Shadowbringers, whenever and if ever Daniel actually finishes Judgment, we'll probably do it in a very similar way where it doesn't actually like, you know, kind of interrupt, if you will, like the regular schedule. It'll just feel like it's a bonus episode, you know, like, you know, in addition to like what's already that week, the spoiler cast is literally its own thing. So that way you also get like, you know, the same podcast episodes that you're come to know and love like every single week at the same time. And it's just the off days that kind of receive the special treatment. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. How do you feel about this idea?
I currently feel ashamed because I've made zero progress in Judgment.
Oh, jeez. Oh, no. Well, maybe we'll find a surrogate somewhere who can do that.
I mean, I will play it. Don't get me wrong. I'm going to beat it. I've just been preoccupied with a certain thing that I'm wrestling with.
Oh, you can say it. You've been wrestling with both Code Geass and, of course, School Days. Like, what else is new?
I already finished my rewatch of School Days, although I'm going to have to rewatch other parts of it just for the sake of the script. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm in the, what is it, season 2, episode 10 right now of Code Geass. Mm-hmm. So I'm like two-thirds of the way done with the show, roughly mm-hmm. speaking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So before we actually start, we actually have quite a packed show this week and stuff. We want to kind of address the passing of Rutger Hauer. And in case you guys don't know who he is, he actually played the role of Xehanort on Kingdom Hearts 3. And, you know, I don't want to I think this may be too soon, but there's so many amazing actors that after they did Kingdom Hearts have passed on, you know, like Leonard Nimoy was one of them. Christopher Lee is one.
I mean, who played the same character, actually.
Yeah. And Rutger Hauer. It's so heartbreaking. And, you know, and it's weird to me because, like, you know, every time I think of, you know, it's sad because, like, I think of Kingdom Hearts and I think of, like, all the great talent that have lent their voices and acting, like, to the series and stuff. And,
like, Mark Hamill. Oh, yeah. God.
Oh, please, God, no.
Don't take him away from us yet. We still need him.
I know. He's national treasure, goddammit. Yeah, and, you know, do you remember, like, the first time you've ever seen him in a movie?
Rutger Hauer?
Mm-hmm.
Blade Runner.
Nice, yeah. He was creepy in Blade Runner. When I was a kid and I watched that movie, I didn't understand, like, the kind of role that he was playing, to be quite honest. Like, yeah he's an android. I can see that. Yeah, like, he was an android, but I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know.
He was so interesting in the role, though, and he has that amazing monologue at the very end of the film, the Tears in the Rain part, which is just like just my favorite part of the whole movie. And I think it's a favorite part for a lot of people as well. And he performed that so wonderfully. And what's really cool about that moment is that he actually ad-libbed that.
Hmm. I did not know that. That's really crazy.
Yeah, he went off script for that scene. And honestly, I think he elevated it. Like, he took that scene and he made it his own and he turned it into something really special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ridley Scott movie. It's great. I haven't mm-hmm. seen a new one yet, but I do still have, like, fond memories of, like, the first Blade Runner. Like, that was just way ahead of its time. Like, I remember getting mm-hmm. that.
I really, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I remember getting that movie on Blu-ray and just watching, like, every single kind of, you know, special effect that they did, you know, like the matte paintings and stuff and how they introduced, like, a lot of the lighting. And it's such, like, a movie that's, like, way ahead of its time.
Definitely. And I really liked the new one. 2049, I thought was a great film. I really enjoyed it.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. The last movie that I've actually seen him act in was Batman Begins. Because he was the guy who ran Wayne Enterprises before Lucius Fox actually took over, if you remember. Like,
I actually didn't remember that. That's interesting.
So the first time, like, you know, I saw that Rutger Hauer, like, passed away and stuff. When I saw that, like, that scene immediately, like, came into my mind because he had this kind of really sassy line that he gave, like, Lucius Fox. And he said something along this. His exact phrase was, "Didn't you get the memo?" And of course, Lucius Fox says it to him the exact same way as he took over, like, you know, Wayne Enterprises and stuff. Because I don't know if y'all don't remember, but, like, Rutger Hauer basically was, like, the person who was handed, like, the Wayne family trust. So he literally ran the company while Bruce was actually away. So when Bruce, of course, gave it to Lucius, then obviously he got tossed aside, and yeah, that was the last we saw of him for the entire series. So but yeah, that was him. It's crazy to think that he was in that movie, right?
No, yeah, I mean, I've only seen Batman Begins once.
Oh, wow.
And that was, like, years and years and years ago, so I barely remember it. But mm-hmm. yeah, I don't think I was aware of who Rutger Hauer was actually at that time. So that probably also explains it.
Wow. Okay. That's cool, though. It's cool that post, you know, like, after, you know, a certain amount of time and stuff, you kind of started seeing him in other stuff. So that's really cool.
Yeah. If anything, that was actually probably the first time I actually saw him.
Wow. So, okay. Yeah, that specific one. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I think so. I think mm-hmm. so.
I think he also did, like, Sin City, like, maybe, I don't know. I'd have to check.
Did he?
I don't know.
That's probably the first time, because...
Not the first one, I don't think, but let's see.
I don't know. I saw Sin City when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, not in theaters, but right when it came out on DVD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look at that. Like Sin City. Yeah, he was in it.
Wow. That was a cool movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The visual style was so striking.
Yeah.
Like that movie looked fantastic.
He was also in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
The movie or the series?
The movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, all right. Yeah.
It's interesting.
Actually, yeah, like, now that I say it, Sin City was also one of those movies that I saw Rutger Hauer in. And of course, after I saw him on Batman, I was just like, yeah, he's coming back, man. It's coming back. But anyways, we don't want to dwell on this too much because we're just kind of sharing, like, our memories of Rutger Hauer. And, of course, you know, our condolences to the family, friends, and all the fans out there who are, you know, who are huge fans of his and always supported him throughout his career and stuff. So, thank you for, you know, for a life well lived, so to speak. Anyways, speaking of lives worth living, you know, if there's one thing that Backlog Battle doesn't do enough of, is going back and playing games that we regret not beating. And in fact, you like that transition?
You mean actually doing what the title of or the name of this friggin' whole channel and thing is? Like,
sure, yeah, yeah, absolutely. So Daniel and I were talking about this like yesterday, like over the phone, and he's like, "I want to talk about something." And I'm like, "All right, I want to talk about games that we regret not beating." And I immediately thought, "Oh boy, that's gonna be a lot." Like, I literally can open my backloggery page and then literally list down, like, every single game. You know what I mean?
Sure. But, like, it was more specifically games from our childhood. Not like, a game that we regret not beating, like, a year or two ago. Right. But games that we played growing up that, for whatever reason, we couldn't beat them or something happened and we were unable to beat them for, you know, reason XYZ.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what kind of spurred this for me was, I'm not entirely sure why I was reminded of this game. I may have like saw it in a YouTube video or someone mentioned it or something, but I was reminded of a Nintendo 64 game called Mystical Ninja starring Goemon. Have you ever heard this game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I actually played the original Goemon on the Famicom.
Oh, wow. That's old school.
Yeah, he actually existed all the way back then.
Yeah, I knew he did, but like, I think the first time we ever got him over here was a Super Nintendo game.
Right, right, right. You're right.
But, so the one I'm talking about is the N64 game. There's two of them. There's one that plays more like a Zelda-style adventure game. The other one plays more like the traditional Goemon on like Super Nintendo, where it's like a side-scrolling action game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, the really interesting thing about Mystical Ninja Goemon is that if you were to play it now and you didn't look up the release date, you would probably make the assumption, oh, this is just ripping off Zelda. This is just ripping off Ocarina of Time. But it actually came out a year before.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really fascinating. And also kind of makes sense as to why the game lacks Z targeting. Because otherwise it probably would have had it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so this was a game that I rented multiple times as a kid. I want to say I rented it three times as a kid. And every time I rented it, I would get further than I did the first time around. So I remember the first time I rented it, I got really stuck because there's this boss fight that you have to do in a giant robot. It's this random event where, not random, but like as you're playing through the game, the main character finds this shell and he blows into it like a horn, which summons this big robot named Impact. And as a kid, for whatever reason, that boss fight, when you're playing as the robot. And it's probably because the controls change so much, and it doesn't explain to you, you know, what the how to control it. So that was probably why I was tripped up as a kid. But like that fight was so difficult for me. And I remember I was only able to beat it like the next time I rented the game, I was able to figure it out and win. Playing the game now, I beat it my first time, no problem.
Wow.
It was not even a problem.
Really?
Like it was pretty easy.
Like you finish it in an afternoon or something?
The boss, not the game.
Oh, the boss. Okay. I was like, dang. I mean,
I haven't beaten the game yet.
Okay.
I haven't beaten this on this replay yet. I was just talking about like the boss, because like I just remember that boss just being such a pain when I was a kid, and I'm playing it now and I'm like, well, that was easy.
No, I get it. Sometimes that happens with me, you know, and that's why like I'm doing this really stupidly long play of like Bloodborne, because I get smarter the more I age. So like maybe I'll just get around to like, you know, beating like the second boss or the cleric beast at some point in the future, within the next 5 or 10 years. And maybe, you know, but I totally can relate to that, because like when I was a kid, I played actually a lot of like NES games and stuff. And, you know, like one of the things that I remember that I picked up was the Japanese version of Power Blade. Now, in case people don't know, there are two different versions of this game. There's a Famicom version, the original Japanese one, which kind of makes the characters and enemies are, you know, feel like they belong in like the Mega Man universe. And then there's also like the hardcore, like Arnold Schwarzenegger looking dude with a tank top and just throwing boomerangs. Basically, both games are about like a dude throwing boomerangs and stuff. But you know, the US version was the more fully fleshed out game, because the first original game, the Japanese game, and my memory is still really good at that game. It's really friggin' cheap. Like, it's so cheap. The mechanics of that game are so cheap. It's just really bad. Really, really bad.
I remember watching a playthrough of that game just because I thought that Power Blade, the American version, was so cool. And then I was like, oh, the Japanese version is completely different. Let me see a playthrough. Oh, no.
Yeah. It's
this does not look good at all.
No, it's
no
not.
Wonder they changed it.
Mm-hmm. There's actually another game that I am not 100% sure that I've beaten. Although, actually, now that I think about it, I never beat it. And the reason why is because when I actually got to the last boss and stuff like that, like, I actually died. Because there was no, like, I don't remember quite the reason why I, you know, I just never got back to it. But it's probably because of the amount of time that I spent to try to get to this particular last boss. And the game I'm talking about is Blaster Master. So I basically got, I remember, like, I think it was when I got to the last boss, I literally had left my NES on for the whole evening, because like I was like, I want to say like it was like it didn't have a save functionality, and it didn't have like a password functionality. So it's one of those games where it's so goddamn long that, you know, you just had to leave your NES on or something, or your console on. And so I played it the following day and got to the last boss, and I'm like, this is so tough. And then, you know, I went to school, and then I came back, and a blackout happened. So, yeah, so I never came back.
You're just like, well, that was that.
That's over. The other game, I'll share this one, right? The other game that I never actually, like, finished was Lunar Eternal Blue. And that, to me, is, I feel, more heart-wrenching, because I really, really loved Lunar Silver Star Story on the PlayStation. And I got Eternal Blue thinking I was going to beat it. No. Just left it on the wayside. So sad about that, by the way.
Damn. And I know a lot of people that love those games, and people argue about which is better, one or two.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't played them much, so I can't comment on them, but like I did play a chunk of Silver Star and I did like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, like that's like working designs at their peak, right? Like, you know, like they were doing Atlas pack-in stuff before, or even like, you know, collector's edition stuff, even before collector's editions were a thing in video games, you know, like a, now it's like regular, like you gotta get like a premium pack, the expansion pack, the DLC crap. It's like, all right, cool. But back then it's like, well, here you go.
It was more special.
It was certainly more special, and it wasn't just a cash grab, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But yeah, do you have any other games other than, you know, that?
Yes. So another game that I had as a kid that I played to death and never beat was Ape Escape.
Ah, okay.
So, and I very clearly remember why I never finished it. This was a game I owned. Unlike Goemon, you know, the reason I never beat Goemon is because I only rented it. The reason I owned Ape Escape, the reason I was never able to beat it is because after you beat what you would think is the final boss, the game turned around and says, oh, now you got to catch all the monkeys in the game.
Oh.
And I was like, I couldn't do it. There were some monkeys. I didn't know what the game wanted me to do. I didn't understand how to catch certain monkeys. I remember there was one in particular. I think it was one of like the final areas of the game where there's like a giant fan. And there was a monkey that was like inside of a door on the other side. And I didn't understand how to get in there, and I didn't understand what I was supposed to do to catch that monkey. And like that, I remember spending so much time in that room with the big fan, and I was just trying to get at that monkey, and I just didn't know what the game wanted me to do. And this was before the internet, so I just kind of gave up. Well, okay, the internet was still technically a thing at the time, but it wasn't as prevalent as it is now. I didn't have easy access to a computer so I could like look up a guide.
Right. Let me read like some of the responses like on the chat right now. So Dom, he says, for 7 years I never beat Ocarina of Time until I turned 12. And then, you know, he adds that he never got to beat Beautiful Joe 2 around 12 years ago. Wow, 12 years. That's a long ass time for a game to be unbeaten. I mean, a lot of these will be more than a decade, right? For Shiro Terra, he says, for me, it was Final Fantasy X and X-2. I always got stuck to a certain point, and I knew that I was underleveled, but I didn't want to grind. And I got stuck on Legend of Legaia on the last boss. Now I don't have it anymore. So, and that's kind of, I feel like, what's part of that as well, is that sometimes you just don't have the game anymore. You know, like I don't have Power Blade. I still have Eternal Blue though, but you know, like when am I going to pop that in on like my PlayStation 1, you know, like when is that going to happen?
Well, you can play it on your PS3.
Yeah.
PS3 is backwards compatible.
Yeah, I guess there's that.
But you're really not.
Yeah.
I know you at this point. You're not.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, like, you know, I about a year or so ago, I feel like, you know, we were talking about this one idea where we could be like a book club, right? Where you'd be like, all right.
Yeah, I remember.
I'm going to assign this one video game. You all need to finish it, including like the fans and listeners of the show. And I'm like, dude, what is the likelihood of somebody actually owning, you know, that game? Like, what if you literally gave people like the homework of like playing through Radiant Silvergun? And I'm like,
I don't remember that being the plan.
I thought that was part of the plan. Like, basically, like, no,
The plan was that we were just gonna actually try and make the effort to beat our own backlogs.
Ah, our own backlogs. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I mean, we weren't going to push the audience to do it, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
I think we were going to call it the, like, the Adventurer's Log or something like that.
Yeah, the Adventure Log or something like that. Yeah. And of course, it never happened because, yeah, I review so many games, if you guys haven't checked out yet, like, that I don't have time outside of that. I mean, I do sometimes are able to insert like a game or two into my schedule, but typically speaking, like I do that, you know, like I already usually have a game in mind when that happens. You know what I mean? So that's, you know, that's something that I can think about. It's like, you know, like we only have a finite amount of time in between projects and stuff and even videos that, you know, like you basically like play what you can play. Like, for example, yeah. like, you know, the past couple of weeks and stuff leading up to Dragon Quest Builders 2, like I've been playing like, you know, the PS Plus games, like I, you know, Horizon Chase Turbo, which by the way, like by the time this comes out, like it's still like a PS Plus title, but you know, by next week it's gone. And that's actually a really good like arcade racer, you know, like it's actually super fun and it's free for PlayStation Plus, you know? Yeah. So yeah, that's really like my whole thing.
So real quick, I just want to talk about another game that I played as a kid that I got really close to the end to, but I wasn't able to finish it. Mm-hmm. And that is Alundra 2.
Oof,
not two. The first one. Not the first one. The second one that no one knows exists.
I knew it existed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I never bought it, but I knew it existed. I have Alundra 1.
Yeah, I never, well, I shouldn't say never. I know that they released Alundra 1 on the PSN, and I did play some of it there. But I grew up with Alundra 2, the weird redheaded stepchild.
Yeah. Because that one, and I think it's like fully 3D, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a Zelda clone.
Right. Okay.
Like, yeah, pretty shamelessly just rips off Zelda. But weirdly enough, like, it's similar to the first Alundra in that it's ripping off the top-down Zeldas. Like, it didn't try to rip off Ocarina of Time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically like this weird semi 2D... Well, it's a 3D game, but, like, it has, like, the sort of top-down 2D Zelda gameplay, but is in 3D. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really weird, but I remember loving it as a kid. I played it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember getting to the final boss, and I remember, because I didn't have a guide or anything like that, the equipment that I had was not up to snuff, so like, you can find upgrades to your sword and shield, which increase your attack and defense in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I must have had like either the second best sword or the third best sword and like the third best shield or something like that. So like my equipment wasn't nearly as good as it should have been because mm-hmm. I didn't know where to find that stuff. So as a result, trying to fight the final boss, I was just getting my ass handed to me. I didn't have the full life meter either, like, because you can, I think you can find health upgrades to increase your maximum health, and I didn't have maximum health either. So, like, as a result, the final boss was really tough for me at the time. And that was a game, like I said, that was a game that, like, I really, really liked. I don't know how I'd feel about it now, though, but... But that being said, similar to Mystical Ninja Goemon, which I was inspired to go back to, and I actually started playing that again recently, and I've made a decent amount of progress in, I feel compelled to go back to Alundra 2 and Ape Escape. After I'm done with Mystical Ninja Goemon, I'm probably not going to jump into them immediately. I do want to go back to Judgment.
Mm.
But... But I do feel that urge to go back and beat Alundra 2 and Ape Escape. That being said, I don't know if I'll actually beat Alundra 2. I might beat Ape Escape. Ape Escape is probably... I don't know why. I feel like that game probably aged better. Who knows?
Yeah.
I feel like Alundra 2 probably hasn't aged that well. Probably isn't going to be that great. But we'll see. I do have copies of them, so... I might do it. I might not. We'll mm-hmm. see. I am going to beat Goemon, though, because that game has aged surprisingly well. Okay. The camera controls do leave something to be desired. The camera controls I say camera controls. There are no camera controls. That's the problem. The camera just kind of moves by itself. So that can be annoying. But that aside, the camera does seem to know what it's doing most of the time. So the game has aged surprisingly well. I'm actually having a lot of fun playing Mystical Ninja Goemon. So I do intend to beat that. And then I will go back to Judgment, and we can have our spoiler cast. Don't worry. I haven't abandoned it. I swear. I haven't abandoned it.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt really nostalgic for Goemon. Give me a break.
Well, somebody has to play through their backlog, right?
No, one of us.
Yeah, one of us has to. I just want to add that Ryoko Azumi actually added that it's Xenogears for them. It's one of the games that they haven't actually finished. Actually, I'll add that to mine, too, because I am aware of the ending and, you know, all the kind of weird things about the second disc, but never actually truly finished Xenogears.
I've heard all the horror stories about disc two that, like, it just, like, Based on what I heard, it turns into a visual novel or something.
Yeah, practically. Yeah. You can't really, like, defend that choice either, because it's such, like a gameplay change, you know what I mean?
It wasn't a choice, though. Like, their budget was slashed, and that they were forced to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because the money, because that the budget that they had went into Final Fantasy VIII instead.
Right, right. Of course.
So yeah, it's not really their fault that it turned out that way. It's just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just unfortunate.
Yeah. Okay. I know that there is, you know, that we have another topic that we want to talk about, but I want to insert this topic in between the, you know, the previous topic we're talking about and the next topic, which is... this is actually really interesting. I found this about 2-3 days ago. And the headline says, Miyamoto remembers the late Nintendo president Satoru Iwata in new book. Okay. So, I know. It's kind of a little bit of a bummer, but it's actually kind of a really nice thing. Mario and Zelda creator Shigeru Miyamoto has opened up about his relationship with the late Nintendo president Satoru Iwata in a new book called Iwata-san. And it makes for emotional reading. In excerpts translated by IGN, Miyamoto recalls how working with Iwata was a stress-free affair, largely because the pair struck up a close friendship that transcended workplace hierarchies. To me, and this is Miyamoto talking, he was a friend more than anything. It never felt like he was my boss or that I was working under him. He never got angry. We never fought about anything. Normally, if someone younger than yourself with fewer years of experience becomes president, it might be difficult to get along with each other. But it was never like that. It had always been obvious that he was more suited for the position than me, so it never became a problem. I think it allowed us to naturally become true friends. And so this is kind of like part of the phrasing too. Although the duo never actually worked on a game together, they would regularly meet for lunch to discuss projects and chew the fat. This is a strange phrase to see in an article, chew the fat. You know, like, who says that? It's a tradition that began after they went for a bowl of ramen together late one night when Iwata was still in charge of Smash Brothers developer HAL Labs. Nintendo doesn't pay for social expenses, so we had to go Dutch on the bill, says Miyamoto, recalling one of their first meals together. That became a tradition that lasted even after he became company president and I became an executive. Commenting on his friend's legacy at Nintendo, Miyamoto explained Iwata has undoubtedly inspired the next generation of developers, who still hold many of his words close to his heart. And Miyamoto said, he left many words and structures that live on in the work of our younger employees today. The only problem is that if there's some good-for-nothing idea I came up with over the weekend, I have no one to share it with next Monday. That I can no longer hear him say, oh, about that one thing, is a bit of a problem for me, and it makes me sad. So this book is only available in Japanese. Hopefully there's a, you know, there's like an English version of this book that'll be made available, because I think Iwata-san is such an amazing and incredible human being. Like, you know, a lot of people remember him as the banana guy, the Nintendo Direct dude and stuff, but he was filled with so much life that, along with Reggie, like, they really became Nintendo. You know, like the foundation for Nintendo, especially in its like greater years, like over the past, you know, decade or so. It's really amazing to think that we were exposed to such a gifted and talented and really kind individual at what it seems like.
I would love if that book were to be translated and got like a really great narrator for the audiobook version. That would be so perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a lot more excerpts from the book at IGN.com, but like, to me, like, it was just so sad, like, thinking about, like, you know, I can't imagine, like, how Miyamoto thinks, right? Like, you know, and thinking about, like, how Iwata-san was younger than him, and yet he's passed on. It's like, man, it must have been really tough for him.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, leaving that topic, let's move on to... Basically, this topic came out from my video that I released last week by the time you guys listened to this. And the title of the video, and before anything else, I labored through the title of this video. And the reason why is because I wanted to make sure that it's not like clickbait. Right, Daniel?
Right. You and I were actually hashing it out. And you came to me, you're like... Hey, help me come up with a better title for this. And I think the two of us bouncing ideas off each other eventually came to what you have now. And I think it works. It doesn't. I think it's true to what you wanted to say without being like clickbaity, like,
or even overbearing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, originally the title of my script said, "Are gamers experiencing Yakuza fatigue?" And I've always felt like really uneasy phrasing it that way, because I know the answer. That just having video titles as a question is not conducive to conversation, because like really, like, you know, you can answer that with a yes or no. You know, and I don't like that. And even on Twitter and stuff, when I actually had posted a link for the video, I actually made that simple mistake of like creating a question and kind of like creating a call to action or a question that was literally like answerable by yes or no. Because sometimes, you know, having that sort of statement, that question, it kind of encourages what's the proper word? Not lazy, but low effort responses. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because if you can just answer something with a yes or no question, if the question is just a yes or no answer, then it doesn't lead you to think more about it.
Right. And so the title that we came up with was Yakuza and the Threat of Series Fatigue. Now,
yes,
it's important to note that even in the video, I basically said that I personally have no problem with Yakuza fatigue. And that's what kind of like what we're calling the phenomenon of basically like playing so many games in the by RGG Studio. So this includes Judgment and Fist of the North Star, Lost Paradise. And just kind of this very real malaise that seems to be permeating across the fan base, the hardcore fan base of the game, and also some casual fans of the series as well, the new guys, you know? And to me, like, what's the most fascinating thing is how varied these responses are, you know? Like, I've had a friend who literally, like, said, like, yeah, if they change the setting, maybe it'll be better. Or, you know, and there's even like a lot of people saying, like, that maybe a year or two off isn't that bad, because... You know, one of the things that I actually showed in the video is that there's been at least one RGG Studio game every single year. And that's being generous, because over the past 3 years, we've actually gotten 6 games from the studio. How many developers do you know that can output on average 2 games per year for 3 years that are still around? right?
Drawing a blank.
Yeah, yeah. Because generally, annualization is just once per year. It would be foolish to make another game on top of what you're already releasing that year. And yet, RGG Studios did that exact thing. Now, granted, all of these games have been staggered in Sega's past, right? Like, RGG Studios, you know, released, you know, Yakuza 0, you know, a while before, you know, before the American release or the Western release, and so on and so forth. A lot of these games were, like, about a year or two, like, delayed until we caught up last year with the releases, right? And arguably, like, you know, a lot of people will say that we're still trying to catch up, but I think we're caught up to this point. But the fact
how are we still trying to catch up? We literally just got Judgment, which is the latest game in the series.
I don't know. Some people still say that we're catching up, but you know, I mean, I know for a fact that higher ups at Sega are saying, like, no, we're caught up.
The only thing we're missing are the spinoffs. I mean, and I understand, like, fans want Kenzan, fans want Ishin, but as far as, like, the important games in the series, the main series is concerned, we've got them all.
Heck, we even got Dead Souls, for crying out loud.
For some reason.
Yeah, for some reason. Yeah.
You know, and I don't think we'll get the PSP games, and, you know, I can live without them, honestly.
Okay, I'd agree to that. I mean, They're so far gone, you know, like, it's just not even worth bringing up, like, maybe.
That said, like, if they tomorrow decided to announce, like, hey, we're bringing out the PSP Yakuza games on Steam or whatever, I mean, I'll buy them and check them out. But, like, it's not something that I'm like, oh, my God, we're never going to catch up because we'll never have the PSP ones. Like, mm-hmm. Nah, I'm good. We're fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's really important. It's really important to know how these constant releases are affecting us. And, sure. You know, and my intention for the video isn't to condemn Sega for what they're doing. I mean, in fact, I'm pretty sure you'd agree that my sentiment for the Yakuza series in general has nothing but praise, right? Like, even despite this aggressive schedule, right? Like, I mean, I love Judgment. For the exception of Fist of North Star, which I'm not too hot on, like, I felt like the RGG Studios team could go no wrong, you know? So that was my main prerogative in that video, is to not make it sound like I'm just poo-pooing RGG Studios just so I can, you know, so I can have, like, a controversial video. But the purpose of the video is to kind of think of alternatives to what's happening right now, right? And I brought up Assassin's Creed as an example. And actually, like, tangentially, I also brought up Call of Duty, because annualizing games, you know, whether you love the series or not, like, there comes a time that your psychology, your psyche is not going to be okay with it. You know, like, it's just human nature, I feel. And
as much as I love the Tales series, even I got kind of sick of it after a while.
Mm-hmm. And you even, like, are experiencing that with Dark Souls, you know, like Sekiro, when was the last time you played that game?
Haven't touched it.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, it's and it's because they keep releasing these games so much, and I feel like I want to play something else. I don't want to play the same thing. And mm-hmm. that's not to say Sekiro is exactly the same as Souls, but just that type of game.
Right.
Like, and the same thing is happening with Yakuza.
Yeah. And to a larger degree, right? Because really, again, let's think about this for a second, right? Like, you know, we got two games in 2017, we got three games in 2018, we got one this year, and potentially we have four next year, including the remakes. That's a lot of Yakuza. A lot. You know? And you want to talk about burnout, if we just count up to 2019, because we're speculating 2020, right? That's still six video games coming from, like, the studio in 3 years. So that means that's, like I said, an average of two, right? Like, you know, they're even worse then, if that's the case, compared to like Assassin's Creed and Call of Duty, where they only release one per year. You know, they're doing two. And yeah, they're trying to catch up and stuff with whatever the Japanese releases are. I get that. But it doesn't change the fact that people feel fatigued. Like, certain people feel fatigued. Let me just finish this. One of our community members actually even mentioned that every time he loves the games, right? But every time he has to play an RGG Studio game, he has to actually stop for a while, like after beating the game, and not going to the next RGG Studio game, because if he realized that if he just goes right into the next one, he's going to get burnt out, you know?
Yeah, I feel the same way. After I beat an RGG game, I can't jump into another one right away because I'm just going to feel that burnout. And even though I don't do that, I still felt kind like that burnout by the end of Yakuza Kiwami 2.
Mm-hmm. And that's like last year, man.
Yeah, but like by the end of that game, I was kind of like, God, I just want to finish it and get it over with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when
Fist of the North Star came out, I bought it, but I completely just skipped over it. Mm-hmm. I didn't play it because I was still like just done with the formula.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until Judgment came out where I was like, okay, I'm fine with coming back to this formula now. Like, it's been long enough. My batteries have been refreshed. I'm ready for this type of game again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's because they've been, like you've been reiterating, you know, so many games within such a small amount of time, and mm-hmm. it's too much.
Yeah. And you know, like, and as far as like how I feel about these specific kinds of, you know, problems and stuff like that or what have you, I know that sometimes the onus is on the user, you know, and I think most of it is, right, to basically stop and say, look, man, like, just like what you did with Dark Souls, like, I'd love to play this game, but I need a break, right? In fact, many people in the comment section of this video, and I encourage you all, by the way, to check out the video on youtube.com/mybacklogbattle, because this is such an important discussion to have with the community, because, you know, like, seeing, like, Sega seeing this, like, in the event that they do see this, the comments and stuff, it's kind of like it allows them to kind of be able to figure out like what to do for their next games. Yes, the channel is not that big compared to most other Yakuza channels and stuff like that, but like there's a very, you know, when I literally like went to talk to people about, you know, Judgment and stuff, like pre-release, right? Like, I noticed that, you know, a lot of reviewers just kind of felt this kind of like, well, it's the same old, and I'm like, you know, obviously me, like, I don't see it that way. I even if I'm entrenched in this 24/7, like, it's interesting to see like other people's opinions. Now, I'm not advocating that we invalidate our personal opinion, and, you know, so that we can support somebody else. It's not even that. But my point is, I think it's important to recognize that if there's a very real problem that's brewing, so to speak, and I'm not saying this is a widespread problem even, right? Like, even in the video, I say there's some parts of the community, not all of it, that suffering Yakuza fatigue, that it's important to kind of talk about it. Because what if, you know, what if, like, heaven forbid, like, next year we do get 4 Yakuza games? You know, what then? Are we really going to play through 4 Yakuza games? You know, and I'm pretty sure, you know, the people who have played 3, 4, and 5 probably, like, are probably going to get it just to support the company. But how about the people who just beat, like, Kiwami 2? Now they have to play 3, 4, 5, and 6, and then Judgment, maybe? Or they play Judgment? You know, it's already, like, these games are not short either. They're, like, 40, 50 hours minimum, you know? And that's, you know, that's crazy to me that there's so many of these games in so little time, you know, and that's not even counting what the following year, 2021, will yield, you know, because pretty damn sure Judgment's not going to stop with one, you know, like, I'm pretty sure Judgment's going to keep going, you know.
No, absolutely. And I would hope at least now, since we are, quote-unquote, caught up, that things will slow down. But then again, there are those remasters of 3, 4, and 5. So, like, what? I don't know what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I personally speaking, I don't really think we need those remasters.
Mm-hmm.
We already have the original versions on the PS3. Yeah, they're kind of janky. Yeah, the resolution and the frames per second isn't going to be as good as the PS4 versions. But I don't think we really need them. And not only that, but like I think most fans would agree that like the PS3 era of the series is not necessarily a low point, but kind of like a weird era for the series. Like,
mm-hmm.
A lot of fans are not really into 3.
Yeah. I mean, that's that game is considered as a transitionary game, you know, like that's the game that mm-hmm. they lost their lead writer for, you know, Yakuza 1 and 2. And now, you know, these are the devs just kind of striking out on their own. And, you know, you are right that these games are pretty easily accessible and stuff. But, you know, I think what's necessitating these remasters is also the fact that these are also going to be forward compatible to the next PlayStations. Whereas, you know, the PS3 versions are just going to be left in the dust. You know, it's still really sure. going to be challenging to like really find them. And, you know, and that's kind of like one thing I feel like is probably, this is just a guess as to why we haven't actually seen the remasters. Is that they don't know how much it's probably going to cost here, right? Because I think if I remember correctly, these are all full-priced $60 games in Japan, or maybe more than that. And to me, that's crazy, you know? These are remasters of an old game.
Yeah, yeah. There's no way they're going to release, like, Yakuza Kiwami 1, which for, like, $30, mm-hmm. and then expect people, and then turn around, and then, which is a, like, a really decent remake, and then turn around and then sell like Yakuza 3, 4, and 5 separately, full price, and they're not even like gonna play as good as Kiwami. There's no way.
And I feel like, you know, that's kind of the challenge that Sega has to face right now. Is like, how are we gonna price this thing? You know,
Dom says a triple pack for $60 would be fine. Yeah, that'd be great for us. The idea of them doing that is insane.
Yeah.
Because that is three, because they're going to be retranslating it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to leave the original translation, because now it has to be retranslated for the sake of continuity.
I don't think so. I think what's probably going to happen is like there are certain things that will be translated, right? And of course, Yakuza 3 had cut sections, so they have to translate majority of that cut content, because now they're putting it back into the game, right? So
Okay, so you're saying that the bulk of the translation will be left alone, but that they're just going to make some changes to keep the continuity, and that's it?
Yeah, I mean, it would be... I don't necessarily think that it's going to be such a dramatic change, you know? Like, I think, you know, like, a great, you know, thing that they'll need to address is the inconsistency with, you know, Fuma's name, right? Like that's a thing that just kept changing, like, depending on, like, what freaking Yakuza you played, you know? And, of course, you play through the new ones, and, you know, he's mentioned in a very different way, you know? Like, by name and stuff. Like Fuma is not even like an actual name in the Japanese script, you know, like it's
right.
You know, Kazama, you know, like, and I think they changed it so that they could decrease like the confusion between Kazuma and, you know, Kazuma, which, you know, like, understandably.
Kazuma and Kazama.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think a lot of that is going to be fixing those and adding things like, you know, the new content back into Yakuza 3 and yeah. You know, and just kind of addressing like Yakuza 4 and 5 and kind of spot checking probably, and that's it. And that's why what's kind of crazy is that it doesn't really take too long. It doesn't sound like it's going to take too long. But the big hurdle is like, this is such a good deal, right? Like, that's like three of the games in the series. Like, how are we going to present that now? How are we going to be like, all right, you know, like, is it going to be separate? Is it going to be a pack? And that's a question that Sega needs to figure out. And what I'm pretty sure, like, I'm hoping, this is my hope, against Hope that once they announce it, they'll literally say, oh, yeah, by the way, it's out tomorrow. I know that sounds crazy. That sounds insane for Sega to even do that. But what would happen? Well, how would you react when they say, by the way, here's the price for all three games. It's out today. Like, what? You know, like they do, they pull an Apple thing and they basically say, like, no, it's out right now. Like, what?
I'd probably buy it. Like, as long as the price is reasonable, you know, if it's what Dom is saying, like, oh, triple pack, $60.
Yeah, that's insane.
That would be a good deal. I would buy it. Even if I'm not like a super big fan of 3, 4, and 5, mm-hmm. like that is an insanely good deal. I wouldn't pass it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure. Okay. So that's the video. If you guys want to kind of check out like what other people have said in the video, we highly recommend checking out the comments because there's a lot of wealth of conversation and discussion about this topic. And again, this is not to slam what RGG is doing. Like RGG Studio is a great studio in my opinion, and a lot of fans in the community like agree to that sentiment. However, you know, like there's so many ways that you can kind of, you know, like think about this topic and stuff. And I'd much rather think about like the positives that could go out of, you know, that could come out of this, like taking a break for a year and making games better, you know, as opposed to like, well, you know, it's great that they're coming out with the games right now. Cause you know, like imagine if they took a year break, how much better their games could be in that time frame. You know, it's crazy.
Not only that, but there is such thing as too much of a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, as much as I love the Yakuza games and I've played most of them, like I have other interests. I mm-hmm. don't only want to play Yakuza games. It mm-hmm. it reminds me of a band called I think they're called King Gizzard and the Wizard Lizard, and it's not a band that I personally listen to, but like it's a band that releases multiple albums the same year. And, you know, for me, I prefer my bands that like they wait a couple of years before they release something, because I think it's good to be able to have that time to digest something, to really like fully get into it and let it simmer, let it like vegetate in your mind before you move on to the next thing, you know, so you can like really appreciate everything that it has to offer before going on to the next thing. If you release too much too quickly, then you kind of disrupt that process, I feel, and you don't have that chance, really, that opportunity to like really see everything that it has.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not really giving, you're not given that chance to do that.
Right. Absolutely. And I think like it's good to kind of end it the episode on that note, because yeah, like there's something to be said about breaks. And, you know, the way that I'll end it is this, right? Like, I was sick for, like, about a whole month, pretty much. Like, trying to recover from a sickness that I didn't want to have. And even then, like, even when I got, like, really better, right? Like, after those 2 weeks, like, I still found it necessary that I take, like, an additional week or two break. Because I want to come back with that same vim and vigor that I had, like, when I started making videos on YouTube, you know, because really, like, if this becomes routine to you, like, you kind of lose the plot and you kind of lose the reason why you're doing it in the first place. And imagine, like, hundreds of people doing that, like, every single year, you know, like, moving on to the next project, moving on to the next project, next project, next project. It becomes very repetitive, right? And, you know, while overtime is highly discouraged in Japan, I can't imagine, like, these guys to make, like, a deadline that they're not pulling a crap ton of overtime, you know? Like, video game development is a hard thing, and it's doubly hard when you're making 2 or 4 games a year, you know? Like, even if it's, like, a smaller team within your company. So, you know, I hope that, you know, if anybody at Sega like listens to this or even watches a video, I hope they kind of take this as kind of like a take two, if you will. Like, it's like, hey, I know you guys are, you know, all set on like making annualized Yakuza games, but what if, you know, what if we do this? What if you take a year break, just like Assassin's Creed did, or, you know, or any of that sort, and then come back with a better game, you know, like a much better game than what people think, you know, like you're capable of. I think that's actually a lot better than, you know, than not, in just going with the paces, so to speak. So anyways, before we go, Daniel, do you want to talk about like how people can find you, what your next project is, and yeah, everything about you?
Sure. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Shintai Reviews. And if you want to follow me on YouTube, it is Daniel Santos, also Shintai Reviews. If you're wondering what I'm working on, I've made a lot of progress on my school day script. I have hit a bit of a wall of sorts because I'm trying to broach an extremely sensitive topic, but I think I have a game plan. I'm going to have a friend of mine I'm going to have her specifically look at that part just to make sure that like it's presented tastefully. And that's all I'm going to say about that. And of course, I'm also waiting on Alex here. I know he's been sick, but I'm waiting on Alex to finish the beginner's guide video. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we can get that soon. Whenever no pressure, whenever you have the opportunity.
It's weird because it's like trying to get back into the swing of things has been a lot harder than I thought. But actually, you know, for people who don't know, we actually got a cat. Her name is Chloe, and she's, aww, you know, and just taking care of her like every single day is kind of helping me get back into the routine of things. So, you know, once, you know, just by doing this for like another week or two, we're going to get back into the saddle, and then, you know, that video is going to get made.
Cool.
And but, you know, but anything else, you can find my videos at youtube.com/mybacklogbattle. I have some Final Fantasy 14 videos that I am planning to release, including something outside of it, which is Dragon Quest Builders 2. That is still in development. I am still working on that. And actually, for the people who are fans of the channel, a very different way of reviewing games. And it's not so different than Hours Later, but let's say that it's, it has the same spirit of Hours Later reviews. And I hope you guys enjoy that version of my reviews and stuff. And, you know, and of course, I hope you enjoy, like, any of the videos that I release on the channel and, of course, this podcast. You can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/mybacklogbattle. Check out my Patreon at patreon.com/mybacklogbattle for a lot of exclusive content. We actually released the podcasts, like, a day or two early and stuff, like on that show, on that website. And of course, you can also listen to the post-show and pre-show segments that are only available when you listen to the podcast live at bit.ly/BBArmyDiscord. And anyways, from everybody here who's listening on the Backlog Battle Royale Discord, this is Alex on behalf of Daniel saying take care, enjoy your week, and we'll see you guys later. Happy gaming, everybody.